you take, let us assume, a third toke. Long and slow, you vaporize, and you take it in and in and in, and there is a sound like the crumpling of a plastic bread wrapper, or the crackling of the flame, or the and a tone, and a tone, a then there is this.
All right, you're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio 93.5 FM, CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaicooperadio.com.
There is a cheer. The gnomes have learned a new way to say who.
All right, welcome, listeners. This is Fane of the Cosmos.
Infinite Moment.
I'm one of your hosts, Dustin Sunflower.
And I'm another of your hosts, Reverend DeMuzzi.
On today's show, we're going to have an interview, proper English. With who?
With Kirk Towsaw, and he's the guy who's heading up the Marijuana Party, BC Marijuana Party campaign this time around. And so he should have some interesting stuff to tell us about how the campaign is going for those folks.
We'll also be hearing about an unusual bust in Ontario where someone was busted with, you got it, it's a hard drug. It's available throughout Canada. It's known as tobacco. What else, Dan?
Well, we're going to talk about, I think, talk a little bit about maybe tasers tonight, talk a little bit about eugenics. It's a little known, well, it's a previously unknown fact until this story broke in Cannabis Culture magazine, that eugenics was practiced against drug users around the turn of the century. So we're going to talk about that.
Well, we'll also be finding about the origins of holy smoke. We'll be finding out when the Pope was chosen, what was that smoke coming out of the chimney? Yes, the cardinals, the bishops, the abbots, what are they burning to make that white smoke?
Witches, I think.
Now, I'd just like to say this weekend was another stellar weekend, including the Wasabi Collective CD release party at the Royale last night. Awesome, awesome show. I haven't been to the Royal for a while. It was nice to have a different scene there. The Wasabi laid down a wicked show, including some new tunes. The Wasabi Collective, some of the new songs, including Jimmy on vocals, which was a real treat, and went over. Amazing, amazing new material. Awesome show, but what more could you ask for than an after party Royale? From the green pastures next to the Kootenai Lake, looking over at Nelson's thousands of grow-ops burning in the night with reggae music, Sound Foundation, with Ites on the mic, Gisto on the mic. Dang, and there's a new backup singer for Sound Foundation. I don't know her name, but rocks it out. Totally gives a nice dimension to the band. Just a great overall party. Bless the people who put that on. So sweet to be dancing to reggae at 4:20 in the morning. Let me tell you, I'm still recovering. Today, I think I pulled my reggae bunitis muscle, my gluteus reggae maximus. I'm hoping that'll be healed up soon. So, yeah, another great show. Thank you, Wasabi Collective. We're so glad you're here. the CD release party was also 1 year anniversary of Wasabi Collective making Coots their roots. So we're so happy to have you here. And especially some of the Sparkle Maidens, Melissa, Tammy, some of the other fairy folk who were dancing about. We're only mortal men. Thank you. What else, Dan?
Let's let it ride for a second there before we get political.
Uh-oh. You just had to bring in politics, didn't you?
Well, why not? You know, I did run in a couple of elections, and so this does have a little bit of interest for me, although I have to say I'm probably a little fuzzier on the issues than I ever have been in the past.
Uh-oh.
I mean, there is Luke Crawford in the area, so there's someone that's at least somebody that I would personally consider to have integrity to vote for.
He was in the studio last week.
Right. And, you know, so if that's important to you, if personal integrity is important to you and somebody that you're voting for, then there's always him around. But, you know, just in general, if you're just really, really disillusioned, last time around there was a movement called Eat the Vote, and they suggested that people do all kinds of things with their votes, including making them into smoothies. Well, this time, I'd like to suggest screw the vote. That's right. Bring a little Vaseline, or whatever your favorite lubricant
is. CRTC, alert. No, I'm kidding.
I just think of it your way of saying they're all a bunch of jerk-offs.
Okay.
Except for Luke.
That's not within the guidelines, buddy. Now, listeners, you're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio, and this is Renegade Radio. This is radio, high-quality radio, radio that you do not get to hear very often. I was listening to CBC the other day, and I can't go back. I cannot go back to listening to CBC because it's crap. I'm sorry, but it's just like, it's still propaganda. It's still whatever. So when you're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio, you're listening to local, community, high-quality radio with diversity, with integrity, with community. So this next track is from Rage Against the Machine. And what is the track called, Dan?
Fuck You, You Won't Do What You Told Us, I think is what it's called.
Okay, here we go. Okay, sorry, listeners. We're just... The CD player loves to play tricks on me. Come on, little darling. Okay, we're just trying to get it rolling here.
Is that going to play, Dustin?
I don't know. Here, we're going to try it in this other CD.
Let's try the top deck. In the meantime, let's all meditate on what it means to be rebellious. Rebellion is a deep-seated human need.
Okay, here we go. This is Rage Against the Machine. We'll be right back. KCR.
Choose a job. Choose a career. Choose a family. Choose a big television. Choose washing machines, cars, compact displays and electrical tin openers. Choose leisure wear and matching luggage. Choose a three-piece suite on hire purchase and a range of fabrics. Choose DIY and wondering who'd earn a Sunday morning. Choose sitting on that couch watching mind-numbing, spirit-crushing game shows, stuffing junk food into your mouth. Choose rotting away at the end of it all in a miserable home, nothing more than an embarrassment to the selfish brats that you've spawned to replace yourselves. Choose your future. Choose life. I chose not to choose life. I chose something else.
He chose Kootenai Co-op Radio. Welcome back, listeners. This is Fane of the Cosmos. We just heard a track from Rage Against the Machine and also from Trainspotting.
But that wasn't, you know, what I thought it was.
Okay.
Bleep, bleep, we won't do what you told us. The first one was that, but number six was the one you played, which was Guerrilla Radio, I think.
Wow. Papa Roots, we're sending out a love vibe to you. It's always nice to come into the studio. It's always warm in here, but tonight it's extra warm, so I'm actually naked right now. No, well, I'm not really. I didn't want to affect the chair in here. Dan, what's going on?
Well, right now we're hoping to get in touch with Kirk Tausa, the BC Marijuana Party campaign manager. I think he's a campaign manager. We'll have to ask him exactly what his official title is.
Okay, well, while we're doing that, I would like to tell listeners about Entheogenesis 2, From Darkness Back to Light, from May 21st to 23rd, 2005, in Vancouver, BC, Canada. This is a yearly journey through psychoactive substances, rediscovering the history of psychoactive substances. The theme From Darkness Back to Light has a focus on the use of entheogens from the time of the Dark Ages, when these substances were widely suppressed and were limited to the occult use, following up to our modern age of information when the entheogens returned to their former popularity. If you want more information on this, go to www.entheogenesis.ca, where you can order tickets. Just some of the speakers are Suzanne Boyd, Michael Horowitz, Phil Lucas, Reverend Muzi, Chris Bennett, Carl Ruck, and Dr. Michael Aldrich. This is always a major, major gathering of minds. This year it'll be at the Morris J. Wask Center for Dialogue of the Simon Fraser University. We went last year. It's a not-to-be-missed event. Tickets are on sale at Holy Smoke. They're $250, but what's included with that ticket price is priceless. So if you're interested, contact any one of us through the store, and we can give you more information. We can tell you what went on last year. It's an amazing experience. Do we have them online?
We do, and let's see here.
Can you get him in here? Yeah.
Are you there, Kurt?
I am.
Okay, welcome to the studio.
Thanks.
So I was just talking about candidates that have a lot of personal integrity, and I'd have to say from running a couple times with the BC Marijuana Party once and with the Marijuana Party federally, that those parties have a high degree of personal integrity in their candidates. Can you tell me a little bit, Kurt, about what's going on with the... Oh, first of all, I want to know, what is your official title?
Well, I'm the campaign manager of the party.
That's what I thought. And
yeah.
How many ridings have you filled so far?
Well, we're shooting to fill about 52 ridings, I think, this year. Of course, the Wednesday is the deadline for filing the paperwork, and we're making a pretty strong final push here in the next 4 days to really fill as many ridings as possible and get our message heard as widely as we can.
It's my understanding that the West Kootenay riding is going to have a candidate here maybe Monday. Is that right?
There's a possibility of that.
I think so, because I helped sign the 50 names or 40 names you need to get on there. So it's
absolutely
Phil.
Thank
from
you for
the
that.
Nelson Cannabis Compassion Club.
Oh, did he decide
to go
it's for it?
Oh, yeah, it's Phil McMillan, and I'm sure he's going to do a great job up there. He stepped up recently and is going to be a great spokesperson for ending prohibition and also for getting medicine to sick people that need it without these kind of regulations that make it difficult and burdensome for Canadians to access a safe and effective medicine.
It's easier to get medicine from a crook than it is from your own doctor.
That's a strange
thing. It's a weird, weird world.
Yeah, and unfortunate, too. I mean, it's a real tragedy of, I think, mammoth proportions, the way Health Canada's approached the entire system of distribution of medical marijuana in this country. It really needs to be addressed, and addressed soon.
So I'm really glad to hear that Phil stepped up and is going to do that now. I was really hoping he would do it, but I'd heard that he might not.
He's doing it.
We're quite pleased to have him.
Yeah, he's got excellent history, too. He's ran municipally here in Nelson, and I think he did a fine job.
That's what I understand, and I certainly look forward to getting up there as soon as I can and enjoying Nelson for myself. Haven't been.
Oh, you got to come out.
You have to get out here.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
We'll throw down the green hemp carpet for you when you come.
Couldn't ask for a better welcome.
It's full of hash holes, though.
Hash burns. No, hash bots. But this is one of the strangest elections. I remember when the Marijuana Party first hit the stage, managed to garner, I think it was 3% of the vote or 2% or somewhere in there. They had enough to make it a really significant. But politics in BC is getting strange.
Well, they are, and you're right. In 2001, we garnered about 3.5% of the popular vote province-wide, which was amazing. And actually, the BC Marijuana Party was the first party in modern BC history to run a full slate of candidates in all 79 ridings in its first election. So that was a heck of an accomplishment.
Yeah, totally.
And so now you guys are like just getting the ball rolling here, really, in a sense. But it's like it seems to me that you may be kind of like just beginning to and getting your policies together. I haven't heard anything about policy yet.
No, in fact, one of the first things I did when I came on to the party in early January was put together the platform, which you can find at the website, bcmarijuanaparty.ca. And what we made a conscious decision to do in this election was to kind of get back to basics and to get back to talking about ending prohibition and regulating the marijuana industry, bringing it above ground, providing, you know, medicine to people, covering it in our healthcare system. And then the many uses of hemp, of course, are a major part of our platform. Basically, all the uses of the cannabis plant that are positive for society, and all the negatives of prohibition. That's what we're trying to point out to people in this election, and to really focus it back on the issue of cannabis and hemp and marijuana.
Oh, that's great. Have you guys had much media attention down there yet?
We've had a fair bit of media attention. Of course, we had our campaign kickoff rally on April 20th, 420. Drew about 5,000 people to the Vancouver Art Gallery right in the center of downtown Vancouver.
Nice.
5 hours of beautiful sunshine, music, raffle, all kinds of course, smoking going on. Not one whisper of problems. Of course, the police, I talked to the only officer on the scene at about 1:30, and he said, as long as you're not marching, we're good. I'll see you later. And that was great. We had a nice time.
Okay.
That got front page of the Metro, Vancouver's date, one of their free daily papers. And a lot of our local candidates have been getting some pretty significant press. Mick Mann out in Alberni, Qualicum's been getting a lot of good press, made the front page of the paper just last week, and spreading the message.
Now, can you comment about, like, in this, these elections are starting to become more tactical. Like, people are like, we just need to get the Liberals out. We don't need any small parties kind of mixing up the vote. Do you want to talk about BC marijuana parties kind of, like, have you heard much of that, those kinds of comments?
Well, we have. I mean, we've been approached by candidates from some of the other parties about not running against them, because this is seen to be an election that's going to be much closer than in 2001. Of course, in 2001, it was really a runaway for the Liberals, 63% of the popular vote. The Greens took 14%, the NDP, I think about 35%. And it looks to be a lot closer this time around. The question really will be, I think, are the Greens and the NDP going to split kind of the left-leaning vote enough so that the Liberals maintain a significant power base? And I think, you know, I'm not so sure about that. In terms of our numbers, you know, we think it's important, of course, to get the right-thinking people into power. And we have, in fact, endorsed some NDP candidates and Green candidate, and decided not to run in 5 ridings. And we may pull out of a couple more ridings as this week goes on, because ultimately the goal, of course, is to win. It's not just to have people in ridings. It's not just to talk about ending prohibition. It's to get people elected that are going to push Ottawa to give up the failed criminal prohibition and to let the provinces take control of this issue and begin to regulate it in an appropriate manner when it makes sense.
So even the marijuana party is getting tactical.
Well, I think you have to be. I mean, we're trying to achieve an objective here. Mm-hmm. And the best way to achieve that objective is to build a large party, a powerful party, a vocal party, and a party that can use the political capital that it develops through its outreach and through its voting and through people coming out and voting for the BC Marijuana Party. That becomes a real tool in our arsenal to go to the mainstream parties and say, hey, you guys have to get on board with ending prohibition. It doesn't just make sense for the province. It makes sense for you politically. It can help you win elections. And I think the Greens, in some way, have already done that. They, of course, have endorsed legalization explicitly this year on their provincial platform for the first time. And I think part of that is because of the impact we had in 2001.
So would you say there's been any other significant events so far?
Well, we're going to have, you mean upcoming events in the course of the campaign?
Yeah, like has anything significant happened yet? Has there been any indication, for example, that candidates might be shut out of all candidates' meetings, or has there been any sort of discriminatory remarks made by opposing party leaders or opposing party candidates or anything like that?
Well, it's always a struggle getting into the all-candidates meetings. You know, typically they set it up so that it's only the big three parties, if you will, to get seats at the table. And the general excuse is, look, there's so many parties in British Columbia. There's actually 46 registered political parties right now. That if we invited them all, it would be a zoo and we wouldn't be able to moderate it. Now, that's true if all 46 turned up. But in real-world terms, four or five candidates are going to show up at any particular meeting. And I think that that's manageable if the people that are putting on the events want to manage it. What we tell our candidates to do is go early, you know, reasonably talk to the people that are hosting the event, you know, call them ahead of time, of course. And if they say, no, we can't invite you, you know, you politely say, well, I don't agree with that. This is why. But then you go anyway and you talk to them and you get face to face with them. And typically you'll be able to, at the very minimum, they'll give you a couple of minutes to say your piece, either at the beginning or the end of the event. And every little bit helps, right? If we spread a good message, a rational message, a message of making our community safer by ending prohibition, people are receptive to that.
I want to just ask you a couple more questions. One of them is, why, and maybe you've sort of already answered this, but if you could expand on it a bit, why pot politics? What is it about becoming a political party that allows you a sort of a special forum for your activism?
Well, of course, there's the ability every election cycle to run candidates and to get the voice out, because you can't be excluded entirely from the process, right? You do have that opportunity to participate. And I think, you know, ultimately, with what happened in the Supreme Court, of course, recently in the Cain and Clay and Malma Levine cases, is that one of the areas of ending prohibition, the judicial battlefield, has really effectively, at least on the recreational end, been lost at this point. There may be a couple of other arguments to try, but it took a big blow judicially. So politically is the area where we need to make the progress. We need to start changing the minds of the mainstream politicians. And having a political party that gets you votes, that shows in tangible numbers, hey, 3%, 4% of the population of this province care enough about this issue to vote for this party, this kind of one-issue party. I think that's a powerful message.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the Marijuana Party does a great thing, you know, with what it's, you know, with what it is. It's like it's so grassroots. It's compared to the other parties, it's so underfunded. You know.
Absolutely. I mean, we're lucky to have Mark Emery as kind of our leading philanthropist and supporter. Of course, we're always hoping that people will join the party and help us out, you know, even with a $4.20 introductory membership. That really, every dime helps, you know. It buys stickers, it buys flyers, it buys print advertising, it buys the things you need to get your message to the rest of the population.
And where can we go to make these kinds of donations?
Well, you can do it right on the website through PayPal, bcmarijuanaparty.ca, or you can join by mailing a donation to 307 West Hastings in Vancouver, V6B1H6, or give me a ring, 604-684-7076. And always, of course, if you're in Vancouver, come by the headquarters. There's always a party going on there, and it's a pretty fun place to be.
What ridings are you still looking to fill, Kurt?
Well, we have about 29 to fill, so I'm not sure you want me to quite run down the list. We're shooting to get about 50 or 51.
So if people wanted to, say, run as a candidate in the party and they weren't sure whether or not their riding was already filled, they could go to the website and find that out, could they?
Yes, they could. And in the candidates portion of the website, you'll see what you'll see is if a riding is unfilled, you'll see my phone number and a little message say, give me a call. And I just emphasize that it ought to be, give me a call, like, right now.
Nice.
Because we need to get the signature booklets together and we need to get the paperwork filed by 1 p.m. on Wednesday. Now, we will help you with that, but especially if you're not in the lower mainland, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a bit of a process, and we'll give you all the support we can if you're interested in running. Anyone out there listening, if you want to run, give me a call tomorrow morning, 604-684-7076. And you don't have to live in the riding, in fact, that you're going to run in. We'd like to fill up as many as we can. I mean, I think it's important.
Now, I'm always curious for the stories behind the people, but how did you get involved with the BC Marijuana Party? Are you a drug war veteran, or like,
well,
have you seen some battle?
I
do you have your purple calyx, or...
I grew up outside of Detroit, Michigan, and I got popped for marijuana 3 times in my teens, and I've been a regular smoker since I was about 15 years old, a daily smoker, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
And I've always been pretty passionate about changing the law and about legal issues. After I graduated from law school and did a little criminal defense work in Michigan, we moved out here, and in connection with working for the Civil Liberties Association in Vancouver, I met Mark and pitched the idea of him funding a conference in Vancouver, which he went for, and we put on in conjunction with the Civil Liberties Association on ending marijuana prohibition. And, you know, that's kind of how I became involved with the party and with, you know, everything going on with Emory Seeds and all the fun things that are happening at 307 West Hastings. I saw that as an outsider, and when the election came around, Mark offered me the job as campaign manager, and I was very happy to leave my law practice in the States and move the family back to Vancouver.
Nice. Holy, a law practice in the States.
Yeah.
That must be wild.
Well, it's...
You must have seen some of it, like going on the dark side, like... You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah, it was... going back to the States after spending a couple of years out here was pretty tough. And it was easy to leave that behind, you know. I mean, obviously, it's a bit of a financial hit, but money's not everything. I think the quality of life here in Canada, and in particular in British Columbia, is so much better.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere of freedom, it just tastes better here, right?
Yeah.
And I think we got a real chance to lead the world into a different way of dealing with cannabis, and I think it's going to happen first here in British Columbia.
Yeah, I think we're like the what's it called? Sober... No, what do they call the Senate? The sober second thought? No, what do
the
they
sober
call
second thought? The sober second thought. That's exactly what
That's what we are for the States, really. We're like...
Oh, I think you're right. Think
you know, we're
right.
Like, are you really sure you want to do that? Like, this is how we live and everything seems to be going good. Are you sure you really want to do that?
Yeah,
I mean, we showed them the way with regards to slavery and that whole thing.
I don't know. Sometimes I think we're more like a psychopath superego.
Uh-oh.
But,
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think a lot of open-minded people in the States look to Canada as an example of, you know, to counter some of the hysteria you hear down there over things like gay marriage and, you know, liberalizing your drug laws or your prostitution laws. And people down the States say, hey, wait a minute, the sky's not falling there in Canada. They're pretty much like us, and their communities aren't falling apart.
Yeah.
And they're allowing people to be a little bit more free. And it's great to set an example like that.
Mm-hmm. Civilization.
Well, we're glad you came up here to give us all a hand with it. And I feel like just your presence here is really going to make a big difference, because I saw how well you did with the conference. I know you're really capable. And so,
well, I appreciate
welcome.
That very much.
Yeah, so good to have you in the studio.
Yeah, I was very pleased to be invited, and anytime you want to talk, I'm here at the other end of the phone line. Hopefully I can get up there in person.
Okay, so let's do the website again, the address again, the phone number again, slowly, for
Absolutely.
All of the smoker tokers out there who are scrambling for pens, papers, crayons, anything they can scratch with, and go nice and slow.
Well, the easiest one is the website. It's bcmarijuanaparty.ca. And it'll even work if you type in bcmarijuanaparty.com. Also, the headquarters address is 307 West Hastings. That's in Vancouver. And it's V Victor 6B Buds 1H 6. And if you want to call me, the office line is 604-684-7076. And we're always happy to talk to people and to sign people up as members of the party. I'd like it, you know, if you're out there and you support ending prohibition, think about joining the party, because it really helps us be able to point to a large membership when we go in and talk to liberal candidates or NDP candidates, green candidates, about stepping up and talking about ending prohibition.
Definitely. Wow, thanks for all your work. That's awesome.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Blessings, Gert. Have a good night, bro. And hey, when you come up, give us a ring so we can take you out and show you the town and stuff.
For sure.
We'll make sure you see the best of Nelson.
And the worst.
You smell the best of Nelson. No, you smoke the best of Nelson. I mean, sorry.
You'll I'm looking forward to all of the above.
You'll have a good time.
You too. Yeah.
You have some kids?
I got two kids.
Oh, yeah, man, they'll love it here. There's lakes and hiking and all kinds of goody hot springs.
Well, we're for sure going to be up in September for the
CCC
conference. Coalition get-together. So
excellent.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Okay. We will see you there.
Right up.
Okay, blessings. Have a great night.
You too, guys.
Bye. Okay, that was...
That was Kirk Tausa. He's the head campaign manager for the BC Marijuana Party.
Now we're going to go to a tune. This is Richard Cheese, and this one is going out to Jorma, chronic cheese fan.
4 and 3 and 2 and 1. Kick it.
You wake up late for school, man, you don't want to go. You ask your mom, please, but she still says no. Man, living at home is such a drag. Now your mom threw away your best porno mag. Busted. You have to fight for your right to party. You have to fight. Don't step out of this house if that's the clothes you're gonna wear. I'll kick you out of my home if you don't cut that hair. Your mom busted in and said, "What's that noise?" Oh, mom, you're just jealous. It's the Beast E-Boys. You have to fight for that right to pause.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio 93.5 FM, CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaicooperadio.com. And if you're one of the lucky people who lives down in the beautiful Kootenai Lake area, Queens Bay Posse, Caslow, Argenta, that area, you're listening at 96.5 FM. And boy, you is in a beautiful place. Now, many of you might know or might not know that the studio here is quite small. It's a little small studio. And it's the gases that are emitted in the studio can linger for quite a while. Dan is busting the Kyoto Accord tonight. In fact, there's an ozone hole opening up over the studio right now as we speak. Need air.
That's hilarious, Dustin. Are you sure that isn't your underwear that's just rotting off your butt?
Yeah, whatever, buddy. Holy, you're doing one of those, like,
Did you take
colon cleanses?
Are you sure you just didn't take your sandals off there? I think you just kicked your sandals off. Anyway.
Yeah, right, buddy. Well, what do you think, Dan? Maybe we should go to Bad Cop No Donut.
Yeah, sure.
No, let's do some news stories. What do you think?
Well, we got tons of news stuff.
Yeah, let's cover what's in the fresh zone. You go first. Tag, you're it.
Okay, let's see.
Man alive.
The fresh zone? What are you talking
I wish
about?
There was some, like, this is the time when I need some Nag Champa in the studio. Like, forget the no burning of incense in the studio. I need Nag Champa. I need patchouli. I need sage, incense. I need Lysol, brother.
Yeah, man, you need it for your breath.
Excuse me while I kick Dan's ass.
Hey!
Oh. Watch it, man. Get it.
Hey! I got him with the Buddhist ball buster. Okay, what's the news item now, buddy?
Well, here's a news flash for you.
He's scratching that chin with that maniacal eye on me. I can barely see him, though, because my eyes are stinging.
Dustin's going to give us the first news flash. He's bent over with a lighter.
Oh, yeah, right, buddy. You're the one breaking the Kyoto Accord in here.
Whatever. Fox smells his own hole first.
Oh, okay, what's the news item there?
Let's see. Well, we could talk about tasers first. Why don't we talk about tasers and all that stuff?
Okay. Is that a kind of car?
Yeah. It's a kind of car.
Like, they have all these new cars like Matrix, Neon, all these kind of funky names. Taser.
Well, no, it's...
No, what's taser?
It's a gun.
Oh, that's it. They've covered that on Bad Cop No Donut. Those electric guns, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've covered on Bad Cop No Donut and stuff. Yeah, for sure. They've covered some of the dads and stuff like that.
Taser International.
But I kind of feel like, in a way, maybe they sort of just scratched the surface a bit, because some of the stuff could have been, you know, a little bit deeper or whatever.
So what are these things? Describe it for me.
Well, for example, like a taser, a typical taser, will sort of fire a... It's got like a couple of pins on it or whatever, and it sticks right into you, and then it's got a couple of cords, like electrical cords, come back to the main body of the gun, and this thing will then shoot like a 50,000 volt charge into your body, which can obviously will incapacitate you in most cases.
Wow.
But you know, the original guns weren't that strong. They were like, I think they were 7 amps. I think
9 volts?
Well, you know, there's a difference between the volts and the amps, because there's 50,000 volts, which is, you know, it's big.
Holy,
but it's the
50,000 volts?
50,000 volts, but it's actually the amperage, they say, that kills you. Well, the volts can knock you out, and they can kill you, too. If they're really high, they can, you know, they can have effects on various bodily metabolisms and stuff like that. And definitely it knocks you out. It knocks you on your ass.
Because I know 9-volt battery, I used to test them when I was a kid by putting my tongue over the two terminals. And, man, it gave you like a little tingly jolt. I can't imagine that times like the thousands.
Yeah, you're not going to put the taser on your tongue. But but the thing about the taser is that it's... It has two settings, and that's one of the settings is the firing setting. The other one is they can just hold it against you and taser you with it. And the people that they've seen, the people that have had this done to them have often some really brutal scarring on different parts of their bodies as a result of the electrical current running through their bodies.
Okay.
Now, the original ones, they were very weak. They were like 7 to 11 amps or something like that. And then they boosted them up to like 26 amps. And those are the ones that we have now. Now, interestingly, Taser International advertises its stun gun as the only non-lethal weapon that can truly incapacitate people under the influence of PCP and other dangerous drugs. That's a quote. Only non-lethal weapon that can truly incapacitate people under the influence of PCP and other drugs.
Oh my god.
And
Reefer madness.
Well, it's hilarious, but... But what they found originally with their 7 to 11 volt weapons was that they would often not incapacitate somebody who was on PCP or cocaine, because that person just had an ability to focus a little bit better. They could focus, they were stimulated enough, the charge just wouldn't quite overload their system because it already had enough current, or whatever it is that's going on in the system was already like strong enough that the stun gun wouldn't knock them out. So it was particularly for people who were on PCP and cocaine that the stun gun was amped up for and made stronger. And so you know, it's interesting that they're advertising this particularly for cocaine and PCP users, and that it was because of cocaine and PCP users that they made their gun stronger. So now once we got that point clear, then we can move on, because what's happening is, what we're finding happening is that the taser is actually killing people on cocaine more often than it kills anybody else, particularly people on cocaine. So they're advertising it for these people. They've amped it up for these people, and it's killing these people. You know, very
convenient,
very convenient, isn't it? The reason is has been kind of unclear for quite some time, but some research that I did on Taser International's own website revealed why this is the case. Now, it's interesting that Taser denies that there's any connection between these things, when on their very own website there's evidence to show that there's a clear connection between cocaine deaths and people being hit with the taser gun. So let's see, what did I find here? I found that, first of all, that there's this crazy article. Well, one of the more recent things that came out was a U.S. Air Force report, and of course Taser was quick to hop on this one and to refute it on their website. What the U.S. Air Force report showed, and this was reported pretty widely by CBS News, was that the Taser shocks cause acidosis, which is basically a potentially fatal high level of blood acid. Can also be a result of a strenuous exercise. Mm-hmm. And this is what a cardiologist, Dr. Charles Rackley, told the CBS. He said, the combination of the acidosis as well as the heart muscle damage would put this patient at high risk of developing ventricular fibrillation or sudden cardiac death.
Oh, my God.
Now I went to the Taser website, and I read their refutation of this. And what Taser did is they published a letter from a cardiologist, another cardiologist, Jeffrey Ho, to support their position. In Jeffrey Ho's letter dated for February 10th, he says that he admits that acidosis can put people at risk of sudden death, but he attempts to obfuscate his admission by claiming that exercise might cause light exercise might cause similar acidosis levels. And the doctor further claimed that most people could survive this light exercise unless there are other factors at work, such as an overdose of a stimulant or a congenital heart disease. Well, of course, these are exactly the kinds of people who are suffering death at the hands of taser fire. And of course, he also mentions people who are on mental health prescriptions, because that can also apparently trigger death if you're hit by a taser, if you're mentally ill and you have a prescription. So he seems to be saying is that there's no problem here. The only people that are dying are drug addicts, insane people, and people who have congenital heart disease. No big deal.
It's their fault.
Yeah.
Not Taser's fault. They're the ones whose bodies can't handle the 60,000 volts. It's not the 60,000 volts. It's just not taking it because they're not set up to.
Exactly. And
They're not normal. They should be tasered.
Well, who really cares if they die anyways? They're either genetically inferior, mentally unstable, or drug users.
Exactly.
Seems to be the thing they're saying.
Tasergenics.
But even more, it's a way of pointing the finger away from the taser. And you hit it very right there, Dustin, when you said it's you know, so what? It's not the taser. And what they're actually doing is they're sort of trying to say, like you suggest, that it is the drugs. And in fact, they've even got another thing that now that they're trying to blame it on it. It's a relatively misapplied label, not very popularly understood, but it's in a report and mentioned in the Taser International Zone website. And the report was written by Victoria Police Sergeant Darren Lohr in 2004. And what it refers to is what it blames these taser deaths on is excited delirium. Now, excited delirium was originally used around the turn of the 19th century to describe people who died in sanitariums due to inhumane practices, and they didn't have any other way of saying basically, the guy like freaked out because we were like electrocuting him over and over again and beating him and treating him, inhumanely. So that when they had to tell
we fried his brain,
or basically we just totally messed him up, and he maybe he struggled to death trying to get away or something like that, or just some sort of mysterious unexplained death from various beatings and stuff like that. They would just call it excited delirium as a way of explaining it to the family. So so now they're using this label again. Well, boy, these people were mentally unhinged. They had excited delirium. They didn't die from taser strikes. And of course, Sergeant Laura's report goes into lurid detail of all these various people who have died in police custody from, and some of them not, many of them, most of them in fact, not struck by tasers. They just died in police custody from this mysterious excited delirium. So what is excited delirium? Well, Sergeant Lohr says excited delirium is physical exertion far beyond normal physiological limits. And guess what it's characterized by?
Drug use.
No, acidosis. It's characterized by acidosis. And it is possible, of course, for someone to struggle so much against somebody else who's trying to confine them that their levels of blood acid get really, really high if it's an extended struggle. And then they could die from acidosis. Well, it just seems to occur to me. I don't know why it hasn't occurred to anybody else. I certainly don't know why it hasn't occurred to Taser. But if cocaine users, this is another thing, this will be the third point, cocaine users also, and this is again is in Sergeant Lohr's report, cocaine users also suffer from high levels of acidosis. Cocaine use causes acidosis. So if and this is what gets me, is that why didn't Taser realize that if cocaine use causes acidosis and struggle with police causes acidosis and getting hit with a taser gun causes acidosis, then the combination of all those three are more likely to cause a fatal case of acidosis than any one of them by themselves? So essentially what you have is and while they're trying to blame it on excited delirium or on cocaine, they're forgetting the fact that all of these things are actually adding up to create a fatal condition, a fatal metabolic condition. So, I contacted, Paul Barash. He's a professor of anesthesiology at Yale University, and he pioneered research into the combined effects of cocaine and general anesthetic. I just wanted to find out, what he thought about this. And I wish I had a tape recorder at home and I could record my phone calls and we could do those neat things the CBC do and just cut right now to what he had to say. But this is what he said. I'll just read it to you. We've had studies where we show with a general anesthetic that is well applied, it can block the effects of cocaine on the heart, said Dr. Barash. General anesthesia will always blunt the effects of cocaine on the heart to a degree unless there's an overdose. The reason why this quote is important is because there's currently a study underway to see what the interaction between cocaine use and tasers exactly are. And what they're doing is they're taking pigs and they're dosing them on cocaine and then they're hitting them with tasers. But before they can do this, because of concerns by human rights, or sorry, animal rights groups, they have to anestheticize the pigs under a general anesthetic so that they won't feel it. Well, the problem with this is that if they're under general anesthetics, that general anesthetic may actually block the effect of the cocaine on the heart, as this anesthesiologist very clearly points out. So I'm not holding out too much hope for these studies. I was kind of hoping at first when I heard about it that it would be good, but I really don't think it's going to be, unfortunately. Dr. Barash also kindly gave me basically confirmation that if any one of these things, cocaine use, extended struggle with police, and being hit with a taser can cause fatal acidosis by itself, that there's a far greater chance that a person is going to suffer from fatal acidosis if they have the combined effects of all three. And he's a professional cardiologist and an anesthesiologist.
Wow.
So, what I'm wondering, are they intentionally putting the drug community at risk, or they just want to sell as many tasers as they can before their stock plummets? Hopefully we'll learn the answers to these questions before there's too many deaths.
Yeah, holy. I mean, this is how I came to know about tasers, and it actually made tears well up in my eyes, was there was a movie played in town called Squat. I think it was about squatters in Montreal. And they went in, and some of these people were tasered 8 or 9 times. And I'll never forget, like, when they broke them up and broke their will, kind of, and the one guy lifts up his shirt, and there's these scorch marks, little scorch circles with 2 defined dots on them, but, like, round, like coins, where they burned his flesh all over his body. And he was just like, he lifted up his shirt like, you don't know how much this hurt. Like, it was like Christ showing you his palms, man. And I was like, I had tears in my eyes because I had never realized how much they hurt you. Like, it's not, you don't just get shocked and then you're down. You're like, ooh, that hurt. I'm, you know, like, it's brutalizing. It's worse than being hit with a club or kicked in the stomach. Like,
I can empathize. I got those all over my body about 2 weeks ago when I was in the studio after you ate beans for dinner.
Yeah. On that note, let's go to a tune. Thanks there, buddy. I'm going to kick Dan's ass while you're gone listening to this.
I am William Wallace.
William Wallace is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. He kills men by the hundreds. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes.
Fireballs from his ass. I knew it, Dan. This is about you, buddy. Get off of there, buddy. Dan's playing with the dials.
Hey, Dustin Wallass.
Oh, come here, you curly-haired freak.
He'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes. Fireballs from his eyes. And bolts of lightning from his arse. I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
We will run!
And we will live. Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Listeners, Dan's shocking me with his taser, his butt taser. Man, you have got to, like, go to the bathroom or something. You're killing me over here. Like, the dials are starting to go funky. The circuits are melting.
Look who's talking. You're over there finger painting with your ass juice.
Hi, buddy. Holy. Okay, forget it, man.
Do you spend more time watching nature programs than experiencing the real thing? More time laughing at TV jokes than joking around yourself? More time watching TV sex than making love yourself? Then there's something you're missing. Television isn't real, but the addiction is.